A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. We now take you to Darth Lamorello's private chambers aboard his personal Star Destroyer as he summons his young apprentices.
Apprentice Cadre, your lack of discipline and faith in the Force is disturbing. Not only did you let your teammates down, but you injured an NHL official on your way to the penalty box. Your hockey stick is your instrument of liberation and the key to our salvation. How dare you use it so recklessly?
Oh, I'm so sorry, Darth. Listen, it made me angry. The penalty, I never deserve penalties. I'm Nazim Kadri.
Apprentice Gardner, your inability to stay on your feet and crush our enemies in your own zone is beyond upsetting. I've seen small children skate better and with more penultimate resolve.
Yes, Lord Lamorello. I'm so sorry. I promise I won't fall over my feet again. But to be honest with you, it was Morgan Riley's fault.
Apprentice Komarov, you continue to impress me, and I insist you continue in all your Weasley ways.
Sure thing, boss. Oh, oops. Was there a meeting going on here, boys? Sorry, man. Sorry to disturb you guys.
How dare we get interrupted? Austin Matthews!
How's it going, dude? You good? You need anything? We're just doing this little meeting here. You hungry? Can I get you an espresso? No, it's interesting, isn't it, to think that Austin Matthews would be the most powerful Jedi in the Star Wars universe if he existed.
Well, yes, it's no surprise. He's off to a great start. He's had his own one-hour television special. Let me ask you this. What other hockey player on the six other Canadian teams has had their own one-hour special on the Sportsnet television network?
Well, listen. We know one thing. As soon as you get your own special, you know you've made it. Because that's huge. I agree with you. I cannot believe that Austin Matthews now has a one-hour special. I saw a little bit of it. I don't know about you. I watched it.
Oh, I watched
it. And I can tell you, really compelling stuff. I don't know what it is. I really like his parents. For some reason, he's got two of the coolest parents a hockey child can have, it seems like.
Yes, there's two main takeaways. Actually, there might be more takeaways for that from me. Number one, his parents seem like very down-to-earth, likable people. Number two, Austin himself is down-to-earth, a very likable person, very hard for a Montreal Canadiens fan to accept. And number three, Toronto Maple Leafs fans all over the world should never, ever criticize Gary Bettman again, because if it wasn't for Gary Bettman and if it wasn't for the Phoenix Coyotes, there would be no Austin Matthews.
Well, that's true. I don't think you can argue that. So maybe it was a real small point of comeuppance that Arizona came in here the other night and basically embarrassed the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, they had a very good Eastern Canada trip. They beat, of course, the Montreal Canadiens.
Atlantic destruction, I call
Atlantic
it.
Destruction, yeah. Very much like what the initial working title of that James Cameron film was called.
The Battle of the Atlantic.
Starring Leo DiCaprio and Celine Dion.
You do realize that Marc Dumont has a podcast called The Battle of the Atlantic.
Yes, yes, I do. I do realize that. Yes, that is a very strange coincidence, considering he's going to be on the show.
Not only that, we've got Jackie Redmond, too. I mean, this is a really exciting episode. If you're tuning in for the first time to listen to us, you're getting Star Wars, you're getting Marc Dumont, you're getting Jackie Redmond. Really, do either of us really need to be here at this stage?
No, I'm sure a lot of people are saying, no, no, we don't have to be here.
They're probably listening and saying, I can't wait for this banter to be over so I can listen to some interesting rants and get on with it.
I just saw Devontae Smith-Pelly score for the Washington Capitals, by the way.
You know, the Washington Capitals, I mentioned this to you earlier, are like a team that you know is in decline. They have to be. They're not as good as they were maybe a few years ago. But isn't it the team that you find that is in decline that sometimes can surprise you in the playoffs because they're just some character players who want to get it done. You know Ovechkin understands he's on borrowed time. He's got to win.
Yeah, yeah. They're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I think right now this is the perfect scenario for the Washington Capitals in that right now the Tampa Bay Lightning are essentially the glamour team of the NHL. They're the model of how NHL teams are supposed to be built now, with speed and offense and some great defensemen. And now Washington's kind of just, you know, lingering in the weeds, saying that, hey, you know, everyone kind of forget about us. There's not going to be that pressure of the President's Trophy. You know, Ovechkin's doing his thing, scoring on the off wing. And you never know. Washington just might come back and surprise people in the playoffs, and that's what they want. They don't really care about the regular season anymore. Yeah.
Well, and speaking of being surprised, I don't think either of us were surprised this whole past week that we've been waiting for our next episode at the way that our teams have played. It's been a rough week, hasn't it? Both our teams have laid eggs repeatedly, I think, this whole past week.
Yes, it has been a tough week, but there's actually some positives in the Montreal camp in the fact that they actually, you know, there's some positives in the loss to the Nashville Predators. Because there's so many negatives. It's so easy to talk about negatives. They got a point. They got the loser point against the Preds while missing Carey Price and Shea Weber. Mm. So I guess that's the positive. Although P.K. Subban did the P.K. Subban thing, which is make a great play in a big game as he dangled, of all people, Max Pacioretty, which resulted in a goal. So yeah, it's been a pretty good week for the Montreal Canadiens, but of course, the big news is that Carey Price will be starting a net against the Buffalo Sabres. So that's hopefully,
that's huge.
Hopefully, yeah, hopefully huge. Hopefully, we'll see what Carey Price shows up, because if it was the first 11 games of the season, Carey Price versus the Carey Price that everyone knows, we're going to see what happens.
Well, and just think, I kept him on my draft roster for 2 weeks, even though he was injured. So it's nice to know that nothing changed in my mentality when it came to Carey Price.
No, yeah.
I still believe he'll come back and make a difference. You know who should have made a difference this week because he showed a lot of good things but then reverted his old self was Nazem Kadri, whom we mentioned in the sketch. A really dumb penalty that effectively destroyed the momentum of the game against Florida that the Leafs really should have won. That was a point they frittered away, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and Nazem has really come about as a player. He's really developed himself as a two-way player, again getting mentioned as a possible Selke candidate. He's scoring. He's on pace for well over 30 goals this year. He's kind of the forgotten man, I think, in Toronto, in that he's a really, really important player, which is good for him, but he's got that reputation of being a little bit of a... complainer, and the dressing down that he got in the penalty box, as much as the officials should be angry that he got butt-ended in the mouth, I kind of thought he went overboard with it. I mean, who are you? You're an NHL penalty box official. Like, easy. Take it easy.
And I'm sure the eyes up in the NHL office were concerned, too. I mean, these players are their lifeblood, right? You can't do things that aren't in the best interests of your player.
Yeah, it's like he was embarrassing Kadri. It honestly looked like a father yelling at his son for doing something wrong. And I was like, that's a little over the top for me.
Well, and I'm sure he got it from Babcock, too, because that was probably something that was talked about after the game, which is the importance of discipline and not letting your emotions get the best of you. And when you're a team like the Maple Leafs and you've got a lot of depth and interchangeable parts, the last thing you should be doing is panicking, losing your composure, or acting like some kind of spoiled brat junior player. It's a real shame, because otherwise Nazem Kadri has been a real successful reclamation project, just like Tyler Bozak and JVR under Babcock. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, and I'm going to defend Nazem again, believe it or not. I mean, how many times have we seen someone slam a penalty box door or throw a water bottle in the penalty box or just throw a towel or something like that? It happens. You get upset in the penalty box. His just happened to be the resulting butt end of a stick into the mouth of an NHL official. I mean...
It happens every day.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You know? It's a one-time thing. It was just a fluky thing, and again... I don't know who that NHL official was, but I think he overreacted.
I'm actually really impressed right now that this might be the first show that we almost got through without a Bergevin mention, but since Jackie and Mark will be covering it later as our guests, I can't help but wonder, here we are again now on episode number 16, and Mark Bergevin is still the GM of the Montreal Canadiens. Are you surprised?
No, still not surprised. Still, I still believe that it'll be very, very surprising if he is let go middle of the season, because most GMs are generally given the season to kind of recover any sorts of mistakes that they've made. And in fact, just recently, Pierre LeBrun of TSN has said that Jeff Molson has given Bergevin the okay to fix his mistakes. He's got one more chance, essentially. And maybe it started last night with trading of Torrey Mitchell to the Los Angeles Kings for a fifth or conditional fourth round pick.
The intensity of which you reported that alone, I suppose, reveals how frustrating a season it's been when that's really the highlight so far. But, you know, as we head straight into the break here for our rants, I got to ask you before we go, what's your favorite Star Wars character?
Hands down, Jar Jar Binks.
I knew you were going to say that.
It's Black Friday. It's the day after the U.S. Thanksgiving. And despite me being in Canada, I want to say what I'm thankful for. I'm actually thankful that there's 59 games left for the Montreal Canadiens to play. 59 games equals 118 possible points. Why am I thankful for this? Well, the Montreal Canadiens are only 5 points out of a playoff spot, and those teams that they're chasing are the Detroit Red Wings and the Boston Bruins. As bad as the Montreal Canadiens have been, I'm quite confident that if they can get their game back up to where it should be, they can catch the Boston Bruins or the Detroit Red Wings. Will they catch the Toronto Maple Leafs? Nope. Will they catch the Tampa Bay Lightning? Nope. But I really do think that they can grab that possible third spot in their division, maybe even a wild card. Ottawa's in the way, yes, but I think Montreal actually has a chance. And that's what I'm thankful for. 59 games left. I'm also hopeful that Carey Price returning against the Buffalo Sabres is the Carey Price that we all love and know. Please be Carey. Please come back. Please come back healthy. Don't get injured again.
I think we can all agree that getting angry at Nazem Kadri for what happened at the end of the Florida game would be very easy to do, considering just how frustrating a situation it was. It was a really bad penalty, the Leafs had all the momentum, and you could even make the case that he basically cost them that extra point with his inability to stay focused and disciplined. But he's also someone who's undergone a tremendous metamorphosis under the Babcock regime, and in particular with the leash that Brendan Shanahan gave the player to continue developing into what is now becoming one of the most effective two-way centers in the National Hockey League. He's going to score 30 goals, he's going to continue to give you quality moments or quality minutes, but at some point you will be reminded, maybe once a week, that the old Nazem Kadri hasn't completely matured quite yet. And this is important. In a league where discipline is everything and puck possession is absolutely what guarantees victories versus losses, you look at a team like the Carolina Hurricanes and you're struck by the fact that they not only are a top 5 team in face-off winning percentage, they're also a team that's able to minimize its penalty minutes and constantly put itself in a position where they're attacking, attacking, attacking. Think of Jeff Skinner and what he did the last time the Carolina Hurricanes faced the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's having the puck and finding yourself in a position to be able to constantly keep the defense on its toes that ultimately wins games. Not taking retaliatory penalties just because you feel that the referee didn't notice that you were cross-checked in the first place. So, Kamal, our next guest here on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan is a gentleman that I believe you've been wanting to speak to for a very, very long time. He is the editor and contributor at The Athletic Montreal. You can hear him on TSN Radio 690. He's a columnist at the Montreal Gazette and also has a fantastic podcast called The Battle of the Atlantic. Mark Dumont is on HVL. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Much appreciated.
No problem. Mark, just before we start, of course, I wanted to start more with a positive, as we can see that the Montreal season, there's a lot of negatives to talk about. So I wanted to kick things off with something more positive, and that is the play of Brendan Gallagher. Can you let our listeners know how good Brendan Gallagher has been?
Well, he's essentially, you know, he's not just the emotional spark plug for the Montreal Canadiens. He's their offensive spark plug, too, especially when you have a guy like Pacioretty, who admittedly hasn't been having his best season. So, you know, if Pacioretty's not scoring, it falls to Gallagher to score. And the interesting part was last year, his numbers were still good. He was still creating chances. He was still on the ice for the majority of the Canadian shots. He was still driving the net. But it's hard to do. It's hard to shoot a puck when your hand's been broken by a Shea Weber slap shot, right? You know, that's not just breaking your hand. That's getting your hand completely obliterated. So it doesn't surprise me that he's back to his old trick this year. He's always had the really good underlying numbers, and now his shooting percentage, instead of being 4%, is back up over 10% where it should be. So he's essentially their leader right now, in my opinion. Without Carey Price in the lineup and with Pacioretty slumping, everyone turns to Brendan Gallagher. So, you know, on any given night, you know that you're going to get a great, great, great effort from him. And that's something that I think the Canadians have been lacking a little bit this year.
Should Brendan be playing, I mean, the line of Galchenyuk, Pacioretty, and Jonathan Drouin has been struggling. And generally, it's wherever you put Gallagher, that line goes. Do you think that they should be moving Gallagher up to maybe pair with, say, Drouin and a Pacioretty?
Yeah, well, struggling is one way to put it. They've been terrible. You know, if you look at the numbers, they're controlling about 20% of the shots and 25% of the scoring chances while they're on the ice. That's the Montreal Canadiens' first line doing that. And I think stylistically, Gallagher would probably fit a little bit better there. And you're right that he's the guy that gets lines going. It's always been this way. Michel Therrien used Brendan Gallagher essentially to light a fire under any line that wasn't working out very well. And I still think he has that ability. The issue is, if you bring him up, and I obviously think Pacioretty should go back down with Philippe Danault, that works well. Pacioretty needs a guy to go retrieve the puck, get it to him, right? Whereas Drouin, he's fast with the passing, he's got a lot of dangles, and we've seen the last three games, there's been a ton of offsides. Their style just doesn't mesh. So absolutely, you can put him up there. The issue becomes, then what do you do with your third line? You have Thomas Plekanec that won't be scoring anymore because right now he's putting up points because he's beside Brendan Gallagher. So what the Canadians need is they need to clone Brendan Gallagher. That's what they need to do. They need to get three of them, one on each line, and then they'd be good to go.
Just the way they're playing is kind of been, a lot of the fan base has been questioning how Montreal's playing. And you recently wrote about their gap control and their zone entries in an article in The Athletic. Can you expand on whether is that a personnel issue or is that a coaching issue? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a little bit of both. What you have here is the Canadians tend to collapse into their zone, which I always thought was interesting, especially when you have Carey Price in the net. I know he's been off to a bad start this year, but I don't think anyone's fooling themselves into thinking he's done as one of the top goalies in the NHL. He's having a hard time, but that's 10 games out of his career. He'll bounce back. So their defensive system, when they collapse and they give up the blue line, is actually counterproductive, in my opinion. With a goalie like Price, again, keeping in mind that tiny sample size where he's been playing badly, with a goalie like Price, I think you can actually stand up at the blue line, do a little bit more to prevent those easy zone entries because they're giving up the highway to scoring chances right now. But also, it's a bit of both, in my opinion. You're looking at a guy like Carl Alzner. That's all he does. He collapses into his own zone. You're looking at a guy like Victor Mete. His issue isn't like Alzner, where he's trained to collapse. He's too fast. When he skates backwards, he actually makes more gap. You know. So right now, I think it's a bit of coaching, Kamal, and I think it's a little bit of personnel as well. Shea Weber is one of the best guys in the league at preventing zone entries, or at least he used to be. And we're even seeing this year, he's collapsing way too much into his own zone. So I can't blame it just on the players. If they're all doing it, there must be some coaching involved there. So I think the system has to take its fair share of the blame.
We're going to get a little bit more deeper into the problems plaguing the Montreal Canadiens. And one of the new narratives, Mark, that has come out is, of course, everyone has been calling for Marc Bergevin's head. Well, not everyone, but a good percentage of the fan base has been blaming Marc Bergevin. But one of the newer kind of developments is the calling for Jeff Molson to step aside as president of the club. Do you see that happening, or do you find that should be necessary for the Montreal Canadiens to turn things around?
Well, I mean, listen, he's the owner, right? So the thing is with Mr. Molson is that he gets to call the shots. So I don't think anyone can call for his head right now. And be serious about it. But the main thing for me, and he's admitted this, Jeff Molson is a hockey fan. He's not a hockey guy. He's not a hockey mind. He's not a business. He's not a decision maker for the Montreal Canadiens. He's purely a fan. And right now, there is absolutely no chain of command above Marc Bergevin. So there's no accountability, right? There's no responsibility there. And I think the Canadiens would be well served to put a president in place that would have a little more hockey insight right now. I'm not saying you need to fire Marc Bergevin, although you might want to consider it, but all the best teams have a hockey president that knows hockey, that knows how to make deals and that has experience there, and the Montreal Canadiens don't. I think it's a little unforgivable for one of the richest teams in the league. So, again, I understand why people are doing it. Obviously, Molson's not going to step aside as owner, but he might want to surround Bergevin with someone that has experience and that can keep them held accountable.
Mark, we ran a poll last week, which we do from time to time here at Habs Sounders as Leafs Fan, where we asked our followers and listeners to speculate on what either team would do to improve itself with realistic personnel moves, not the blockbuster trade. I think we're hearing too much of that now that people are theorizing where Shea Weber or Gary Price might end up. We all know that it's silly to do that. Of course, I could eat my words a week from now for all we
is
know.
It?
But exactly. That really is the question, is it? Is it fantasy? But we offered up names like Alex Galchenyuk and Thomas Plekanec,
yeah,
and James Van Riemsdyk and more realistic names like that. On the Montreal perspective, what could you see realistically happening over the next few weeks that might be done to shake this team up and try to get them trending in the right direction?
That's the thing, is that they're out of assets right now, Ari. Like, there's no one left to trade, right? Sergachev was, I still think that was a good trade for the Canadiens. I know Sergachev's a very good player, but so is Jonathan Drouin. You know, he's young. He's got many, many, many years ahead of him. But right now, obviously, the key factor for them would be, if you're going to try to make it, which right now I think they're sitting between 5 to 10% chances to make the playoffs, but if you're going to try to make it, and the logic here is that you have Carey Price, Shea Weber, you know, it's time to go for it. I think you need to find a partner for Shea Weber. He's being used as a guy to drag his partners to respectability. And to me, that's kind of a misuse of Shea Weber. I know he can make other guys play well. Like last year, he dragged Alexei Emelin's corpse all around the ice. and he made him look pretty half decent, right? So the thing is, if you're counting on your number one to make your number four look like a number two, you're probably not using him wisely. I'd like to see someone that can move the puck. Essentially, maybe give Victor Mete another chance if you can't find someone on the market. But the biggest downfall for the Canadiens right now is they have only one guy that can move the puck, and that's Jeff Petrie. So he's playing too many minutes, and we're seeing, he'll make a mistake here and there when he's one-on-one. Because he challenges players instead of allowing them in the zone. But really, they're not giving Shea Weber any help. And that, to me, you're mitigating his value. I wrote about it for the Gazette today. You're looking at his partners over the last 2 years, Alexei Emelin, Jordy Benn, Carl Alzner, and Victor Mete. Now, there was a period there where he played with Markov, and their numbers were amazing. But other than the 150 minutes he played with Markov, if we're being honest here, none of those guys have been top-pairing defensemen. So, to me, that's their major issue. If you're going the other way, Ari, I think you have to consider strongly trading Max Pacioretty. He's a very, very good player. The thing is, next year, you're losing the value of his contract, right? Next year, he's going to be a $7, $8 million player. For now, his value, and I don't necessarily think they should trade him, but if you're going to go that route, you have to take advantage of the fact that he's making $4.5 million this year, because teams will pay you a bonus, considering we're in a salary cap era where every dollar counts. So that route might be worth exploring if the going gets even worse than it is right now.
Is that an indictment of his leadership in the sense that, think back to last Saturday, and we all saw the game and we all appreciated that in the first two periods, the Habs had tremendous fight in them. And then something happened, and it was gone. There was a drop off. Does that have something to do with the effort that you see on a game in, game out basis, or is that more just a question of talent and a lack thereof?
I think it's more of a team psyche at play, Ari. I hate to criticize Max Pacioretty's leadership, and I know everyone does it, but unless you're in the locker room, and I'm not talking when we go in the locker room after a game, I'm talking once the cameras are gone and the reporters are out of the room, unless you're in that room at that point, you can't really criticize his leadership. I feel like it's way too easy to turn around and say, oh, he's a bad leader because they're losing. That's not necessarily the case, right? That's a little short-sighted, in my opinion. But I think it's essentially you have a team that has been crumbling every time they hit a little bit of adversity. How many times have been scored on twice within a minute? Nine times this year.
Nine times.
9 times in 22 games, 23 games? I mean, you know, you look at it positively. Hey, they didn't get scored on twice in under a minute in 13 of their games. That's the big highlight, right? But so I think it's really just the entire team has a fragile mentality and psyche right now where they don't think they can do it, right? And that might be nothing, right? You can't put any tangible value on that. But once a player gets it in their mind that they're probably going to get scored on in quick succession, they start to be a little nervous, and once you're nervous, you start making bad plays. So right now, I think it's the entire team. I don't want to use the term squeezing the stick too tightly, but maybe they're overthinking it a little.
With Mark, though, it seems that Montreal has been fragile for a while. Anytime there's any sort of adversity, whether it be the injury to Price or going back to 2014, where Price got injured for that Rangers series, and they just kind of dropped off, and they were just saved by Tokarski. Two years ago when Price got injured, there was also, you know, the drop-off. It wasn't a rallying point for them, and obviously Price is a major, major important player on the team, but it just seems that the team for a while has been fragile, and I kind of have to look at who the core has been for those past several years. And unfortunately, I have to look at Pacioretty. And does there need to be that big change, as you just spoke about?
Well, I mean, we can look at it two ways, right? And they have crumbled when they've had injuries to their most important player. Now, I think most teams would go through that. Let's say you take away Connor McDavid from the Edmonton Oilers right now. They're a lottery team, right? So we do have to keep in mind that when you lose an important player, injuries are the biggest factor in success in the NHL. If you plot a line between man games lost and points, they will go completely perpendicular to each other, right? So I think the only exception was with the Pittsburgh Penguins. You can lose a Sidney Crosby for a little while if you have an Evgeny Malkin behind him.
Oh, yeah.
They have the advantage of having, you know, two of the best centers in the NHL. But for the Canadians, I think one of the main issues here is that they lack a game changer. Now we have to keep in mind, Max Pacioretty has scored more game-winning goals than I think anyone else over the last 5 years. Maybe Ovechkin is ahead of him, but he has come through with clutch goals. It just seems that there's no one there since P.K. Subban left that can really break the game open, right? Do like what we saw, you know, what we saw last night from Subban. Bring the puck from his own end, deke three players. He didn't even get an assist on that play, if I remember correctly, or they might have added one. But that's the kind of game-breaker, game-changer that the Canadians lack in their roster. Their game-changer is Carey Price. So as soon as they lose the guy that'll change the momentum, and they follow Price's lead. That's the thing, is that he's very much the leader, in my opinion, of this team. And once he falters a little bit, once your leader falters, it seems like they have a hard time regrouping. I'm with you on that one. But I just don't know how you fix that, right? Winning ails everything. It cures what ails you. But right now, they're just lacking a guy. Like, I was hoping Jonathan Drouin would be that guy for the Canadians. But transitioning to center is quite the task. And he started off well. He's struggling a little bit now. So the Canadians just they're missing that X factor in their lineup right now. And it's unfortunate that they traded away a few guys that could be that X factor, you know, guys like, or they got rid of them, guys like Radulov, guys like Markov, guys like Sergachev, guys like P.K. Subban. These are all guys that can open up the play with a fantastic play at any given time. And the Habs simply lack that type of personnel in their roster right now.
How long can Montreal continue with this Jonathan Drouin at center experiment? Is it an experiment, or do you foresee this continuing long-term?
Well, here's how I look at it. I advocated for keeping Alex Galchenyuk at center, even if he had some struggles. By the way, Alex Galchenyuk, when he's at center, he scores more and he allows fewer chances against. Let's put that, but, you know, the idea that he can't play center to me is shenanigans. It's poppycock, right? There's no, you know, it's just a couple guys that look at it and say, oh, no, you know, he had a minus on that night. Well, yeah, okay, that's fine. He's not great on faceoffs either. That's fine as well. It's not a big deal. It takes time to learn. So in that vein, since I preach for patience for Galchenyuk, I would do the same for Jonathan Drouin. He needs, it's such a tough task to move to center. The last time I saw him play center was when he was with the Mooseheads, and not the season that he played on the line with Frick and McKinnon, because McKinnon was taking all the faceoffs. It was the year after that, once McKinnon graduated, and Drouin was only taking about half the faceoffs during that season. So, you know, it takes a while. It's one of the toughest positions to transition to, and I think the Montreal Canadiens need to be patient, especially if it's going to be a lost season. You know, then ride it out. All the best centers in the NHL have spent several years there. It takes a long time to learn. So I wouldn't worry too much about him having a hard time on faceoffs. That'll come with time and practice. If the Canadiens want to win right now, though, they might want to consider moving him out just because I don't see enough defensive presence on that line when he's playing center. Well, when Lekkonen was healthy, he saved their bacon, right? He would go back. He'd be basically a third defender. But without Lekkonen on the line, Jonathan Drouin's having a hard time with his positioning in the defensive zone. So, you know, it's if you're going to make that run, consider moving him out. But my question to you, Kamal, is who goes to center then? You know, do they have a choice right now? Can they even move him out of center? I'm not sure they can.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same camp as you are, Mark, where I would like to see Galchenyuk get another chance at center, but
yeah, but that boat has sailed.
That's not happening for sure. Yeah, I agree. No. Yeah, I think they're stuck with Drouin at center. Yeah.
Yeah, and they kind of back themselves into your corner here. So and talk about putting pressure on a kid, eh? They're talking about the next big French superstar in Montreal. Mm-hmm. They trade their blue chip prospect for him. And, oh, by the way, you're going to be the next great center as well. So let's just, you know, let's just kill two birds with that one Francophone stone. You know, I think the pressure of playing center is getting to him a little bit lately. And but the best way to create centers is patience. Be patient, patient, patient. They're going to make errors, especially when they're restarting at 22 years old. That's a very big ask.
You mentioned, Mark, that it's potentially going to be a lost season, or maybe they do try to go for it and make the playoffs. And with it being the U.S. Thanksgiving, everyone talks about if you're out of the playoffs by U.S. Thanksgiving, there's a very small chance that you will make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What do you think will happen? And if they are, basically, I'm thinking they're not going to make the playoffs. It just seems too hard of a task to play over 600 hockey to make the playoffs. If that's the case, what should the Montreal Canadiens do in terms of their roster, in terms of, you know, rebuild? That's a big question going around Montreal nowadays, is should they blow it all up? What do you think they should do?
Well, I think this roster is probably, it's not as bad as we tend to think. Okay, if we go through the forwards, so you have, let's say your top six, Pacioretty, Drouin, Gallagher, Galchenyuk, Danault, Shaw, right? Those guys are all under 28. If you take Pacioretty out of there, I think they're all 25 or 26 and under, which is not bad. You have a guy like Lekkonen, 23 years old, if I remember correctly. Nikita Sherbak, very young as well. So the forward lineup, in my opinion, isn't too bad. I don't think you need to tinker with that too much. They could use, obviously, a center, but that's been an issue ongoing since I've been watching the Montreal Canadiens, right? So I think if they do anything, if you are going to do a retool or a rebuild, you're going to have to focus on the defense. And I hate to say this, but you need to get Shea Weber's contract off the books. It's not something that you can live with while you rebuild, and his value is only going to go down. I think he's still perceived as one of the best defensemen in the NHL right now, so you could probably get a king's ransom from him. But if you're going to go the rebuild route, Shea Weber has to go.
And Carey Price stays as well, Mark?
Yeah, no. But again, do you ever see Marc Bergevin considering trading either of them? I don't. If you're going to trade Shea Weber, though, yes, then you do try to trade Carey Price. You're looking at guys that are perceived as the top five in their position. You should be able to get a ridiculous haul from both those players. But the thing is, are Montreal Canadiens fans going to be patient through a rebuild? We can talk to Ari here a little bit how that goes. Obviously, you know, you go through the Ballard era and then the Burke era. That didn't go too well. But I don't think Canadiens fans have the mettle to hang around as much as Leafs fans did, if I'm being perfectly honest. We're already seeing the tickets aren't selling out like they used to. So if that impacts the bottom line. And Jeff Molson, his team's about to not get playoff revenue once again. He's gotten very little playoff revenue since he's bought the team. I know he's not in dire straits financially, but you have to keep that in mind, that it's still a business and they try to make money. So I don't think management is considering it whatsoever. But if you're looking down the road and, you know, if you're going to move a guy like Pacioretty, then you got to go all in. Then you have to move a guy like Weber and Price, because Price will keep you at a respectable level where you won't get a good draft pick. Remember when the Leafs traded Phil Kessel? They didn't get a great return for that, but they also ended up picking Austin Matthews first overall. I was speaking to a former, you know, a guy that used to write for my blog. He now works for the Leafs, and he said trading Kessel was as much about, you know, getting some prospects as it was that he was keeping us way too good. You know, it was all about trying to find a way to legitimately not make the roster worse, but give them better odds to win the Austin Matthews sweepstakes.
It's funny that you mentioned about how Toronto fans handled the situation in terms of the tank. I found, you know, living here in Toronto, that it was, yes, attendance dropped off a little bit at the ACC, but there was hope being sold to the Toronto fans.
Yeah.
And there was a plan in place, and fans could see the end game. And now we're actually witnessing it and seeing that it's now going to be 15 years of greatness for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think, now, with Mark, you being right within the climate of Montreal, of the Montreal fan base, would they be sold on hope?
Nope, not whatsoever. I really don't think so. And that's not to discredit Montreal fans. It's just they've never had to endure this, right? I mean, there was the early 2000s, which were a dark period. But that's the Canadiens' dark period, where the attendance dropped off massively, and it lasted about half a decade. Right? Whereas the Leafs went through, 40, 50 years of that, and the attendance still, you know, okay, it dropped off, but it was still pretty darn good, even if they had some pathetic roster. So I just don't think Canadiens fans have the patience to do that, to go through a slow rebuild. And you can sell them on hope, but Montreal, it's show me the money, right? It's, you know, give me evidence right now. I'll come back to you once that hope turns into something decent. But I just don't see the fans going along for the ride right now. It's a new idea. Have the Canadiens ever rebuilt? They've done retools, but they've never really done a rebuild except for maybe in the 1930s, 1940s. So I just don't know if fans can be patient enough to let that happen.
See, Mark, I'm still digesting that you made me reminisce about the Ballard and Burke era, roughly at the same time. The truculence, the pugnacity, the belligerence, the reality that was the ridiculous Phil Kessel trade, and I'm sure you easily could have thrown in the whole Dion Phaneuf trade and trying to turn him into a number one defenseman. The one thing, though, as dreaded as those moments in time were, and there's a certain obvious satisfaction for Leaf fans to see that their so-called vaunted rebuild of 3 to 5 years has taken about 12 months, my question to you is, I'm having a hard time appreciating how Montreal Canadiens fans are supposed to accept a rebuild until their organization are effectively ready to be honest with them. Because as a Leafs fan watching this, I'm thinking there's a lot of doublespeak going on. I'm getting this impression that the club right now is being pulled into two philosophical directions. What's your take about the message that Bergevin is saying versus the actions that they're taking?
Well, that's interesting, because since he's taken over, Marc Bergevin has set the sights real low, right? It's essentially, we're going to make the playoffs and then see from there. So I think he's keeping the bar pretty darn low for the reason of, you know, it's better to undersell someone. And if it works, well, then, you know, you can say, hey, look, we exceeded expectations. But no, fans are not very much in a trustworthy mood when it comes to the Montreal Canadiens lately. You can just check it on Twitter. You know, every time something happens, there's always a callback to, like, you know, minor injury for Price. Uh-oh. We all remember how that went last time. You see other teams like the Dallas Stars just disclosing their injuries, which is fantastic, whereas the Canadiens, it's shrouded in mystery, which is just, you know, I get it. You don't want to reveal who it is or, you know, what this particular injury is, but if you're going to ask fans to spend hard-earned money and the Canadiens charge almost as much as the Leafs in a much poorer city, keep that in mind. Toronto has a lot more money flowing in it, a lot more business, you know, a lot more commercial. So if you're going to keep charging fans the second most in the NHL, I think you need to be a little more honest with them. And what we've had here in the last few years are a repeat of the same situations with PK Subban, that he said, she said, with Radulov, he said, she said, with Markov. You know, there's been all these situations where you're left saying, like, okay, who's lying here? Even with David Poile, there was an issue where Poile said, Marc Bergevin called me, and Bergevin said, oh, no, Poile called me. So there's been four or five instances where Marc Bergevin has completely said the contrary of what the other person has said. So you have to start to wonder, what's the common factor there? Now, I don't want to be calling him a liar. Don't get me wrong. It's just, it raises eyebrows. And I think for fans that to give their unconditional support, there'd have to be a little bit more transparency on that level.
We can only hope that the various different provincial and federal governments are also listening to this as well. Maybe they'll listen to this podcast, appreciate the value of transparency and truthfulness with people that matter. Mark, take a moment to let our listeners know what you're up to with The Athletic. Maybe talk about some articles or projects you have on the go and how they can find you on social media.
Yeah, so right now, what I do mostly with The Athletic is I do cover the Laval Rocket. Which is, you know, they're a fun team. If you want to see a team actually win near Montreal, you can go see the Laval Rocket for about $20. And also there's Les Canadiens too, the women's team. They win championships, unlike the Canadiens lately. But yeah, so I cover them for The Athletic, and I also do analysis for the Montreal Canadiens there. You know, just breaking down play. What I like to do is I like analytics, I like the numbers, but I also like to add video into there. And, you know, because I think you need to tie both of them in. Nobody really wants to read 3,000 words about numbers, in my opinion. You know, you have to give them proof of what's happening here. So that's something I like to do a lot with The Athletic. And you can read all of it there at theathletic.com. We do free trials, and there's a Black Friday sale on. Is this podcast coming out today?
We're going to try to get it out. If not today, tomorrow. We'll get it out before Friday.
Yep.
All right. Well, if it comes out today, there's a Black Friday sale. I think it's 50% off. So you end up, it's about $2.50, $3 a month, you know, less than a cup of coffee every 2 weeks. So we try to do, we have guys at every single game. We do analysis and podcasts and all that fun stuff at theathletic.com.
Absolutely awesome. Fantastic, Mark. Seriously, this has been such a great experience for us. We would love to have you back in the future. We're going to be hosting various different round tables, and we need, of course, to balance the Habs and Leafs presence. It would be lovely to have you back, and we hope that you found this as enjoyable as I did listening to the two of you talk about the future of the Habs.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks a lot, Kamal, and thanks a lot, Ari. I'll be back anytime you want me.
On today's episode of Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan, we're going to bring you a tremendous, tremendous surprise, one that in some ways we least expected because she's so insanely busy, but she's a big friend of the show's and we're huge admirers of her, and now she's with the NHL Network. I'm talking about Jackie Redman. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? I'm happy to be back. It's a different show, I know, but back with you is great. Great to talk to you.
Absolutely. There's a great series of variations here, the biggest one being that we're talking hockey, but I'll get you through it because it's still me, believe it or not. I haven't changed very much from the last time we had a chance to speak. You, on the other hand, nothing but changes. You went from being on Rogers Sportsnet, on everyone's television in the evening, and now they find you on the NHL Network. What's that been like?
It has been such a whirlwind couple of months, but you know, it's been everything that I hoped it was going to be when I came out here and met with the fine folks at NHL Network. So it's been awesome. You know, I've wanted to do a hockey show since I started in this business, and as much as I loved everything that I was doing at Sportsnet, I had a lot of fun there. I think it was time for a new challenge and time to grow, you know, not just as a person, but as a broadcaster. And this presented the perfect opportunity for me. You know, I get to talk about hockey for 2 hours every single day. And we do everything from previewing the games of the night, giving our opinions, debating each other, and also, you know, having a lot of fun. And I get to have a voice here, and it's really an exciting time for me. The other thing is that, you know, I am in the same building as the MLB Network, and as you know, I'm a big baseball fan too. So it is a perfect marriage of opportunity over here, working with everyone here. So it's been amazing. Although I will say, figuring out a new routine and where to drink coffee in the United States has been the biggest challenge so far.
Well, but just think, your reward is you get to quote and tell people, I have my own hockey show. How about that? There's something I'm sure you enjoy saying.
Oh, if I could go back and tell my 14-year-old self that would happen one day, my 14-year-old self would be very, very excited.
I have no doubt. And certainly you've worked hard to get to this point. And as a result, as you mentioned, you get to enjoy the opportunity to talk about hockey for hours on end over the course of a week. So I would imagine there's quite an opportunity to get tremendous exposure and a lot of hobnobbing with a lot of players, former athletes, and other media tapes on the U.S. market.
Oh, that's been the craziest part of all of this is every day we have at least 7 to 9 guests a day, one of which is usually a player or a coach or a GM or somebody that used to play. And then, you know, we go around to every rink for the game of the night and we talk to beat reporters, we talk to insiders. It's the networking I've done in the 6 weeks that I've been here has been insane. And we've got some great people here. Today I'm doing a show with Issa Radic, who is on the show every day, but also Alex Tanguay, who obviously is a former player. You know, he's fantastic. He breaks down the game better than a lot of people out there. He's very, very good at it. So I'm enjoying it, and I'm also learning a ton and meeting a ton of great people in the hockey world as well.
So, Jackie, as someone who has followed hockey for a very, very long time, we know it's a huge passion of yours. It's such a strong passion that I remember you gushing about it on the baseball show, which is a testament to how you feel about this sport. Having now been closer and having a chance to get some tremendous exposure, what are your thoughts on the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs when it comes to this 2017-2018 hockey season?
Well, first of all, what a game on Saturday night. 6-0 for the Toronto Maple Leafs. How about that? That was very fun to watch for me as a Leafs fan because, you know, what's crazy is that 3 or 4 years ago, if you had asked me who is going to be a more competitive team in 2017, the Montreal Canadiens or the Toronto Maple Leafs, I probably would have said the Montreal Canadiens because, you know, they got the best goalie in the world, arguably, Carey Price. They had PK Subban at the time. They were looking like a really good team, and the Leafs were a mess. I would say something else, but I don't think I can on this show. But they were a mess. Nobody knew what was going to happen with them. This was before Babcock was there. So I would have said the Habs, and now here we are in 2017. And even people might not believe me, but before this season started, I said, like, I don't think Montreal is going to be that good. They have a fantastic goalie, but I just don't think they're that great of a team, especially at the forward position. So it's crazy the difference a couple of years can make, and the Leafs are not only good, they're one of the most fun teams to watch in the NHL. And that in and of itself is a win for me because there were some real bad years not that long ago.
And when you look at the way these teams have changed and developed, is that a reflection on the league as a whole to some degree? I mean, I'm sure now you're looking at things from a more macro perspective when it comes to the National Hockey League. What are your thoughts about the state of the league and the job that it's doing in connecting with fans and bringing out more and more new enthusiasts to the game?
Well, I think what we've seen, you know, especially this year and last year, is the game, it's so fast, and it's a very young league as well. You know, some of the younger teams are the better teams in the league because they're faster. And then we saw, you know, the change in the enforcement of the rules this year with the slashing penalties. And I think that has made the game even faster and even more exciting. And now these skilled players are able to actually utilize their skills without having to worry about, you know, getting tugged on or slashed really hard, which, you know, as early as a couple years ago was the norm. And I think it's really opened up the game. And, you know, they say timing is everything. And I think the timing of that shift in the way the game is played coincides with the Leafs, you know, building their team towards a championship caliber roster and going younger and going faster and being a team that, you know, in transition is one of the best in the entire NHL, not even just the Eastern Conference. So, you know, timing is everything. I know I already said that, but the game's getting faster. The game's getting younger. They're making changes to the game to allow for it to be a faster, more skilled game, and that only benefits the Leafs.
Speaking with Jackie Redmond of the NHL Network, just realized how much I enjoy saying that compared to before. Jackie, tell me, besides some of the usual suspects that we hear about across the NHL in terms of player talent, and of course I'm talking with Crosby and Matthews and McDavid, who are some of the players that maybe you're noticing that the average fan should become more and more aware of or invariably will in the days to come because they're that exciting and dynamic?
Oh my goodness, there's so many. You know, but you know, I'm going to name some obvious ones here, but I love watching Erik Karlsson. I'm not big on watching the Sens, but I do love Erik Karlsson. That's not a name that anyone hasn't heard before, but he just is one of the best players, not even just defensemen, one of the best players in the league. And when he has the puck, he is so much fun to watch. Obviously, Nikita Kucherov is something else this year. He is unbelievable, and what he's got going on with Stamkos is incredible. But what I've learned from some of the people that I work with here at the NHL Network is that Nemestikov's role on that line, even though it's overshadowed and even though people don't, he's not the guy that people are talking about, what he does is so important to the success of that line. I think a lot of people think, well, it's Stamkos and Kucherov. You could throw anyone on that line, and they would be successful. But I don't think that that's the case, because I think part of Nemestikov's role is understanding what he needs to do so that those two can put the puck in the net. And that changes. It's not easy. And, you know, I already mentioned Alex Tanguay here, but I can't say enough about how great I think he is. But he talks a lot about how understanding how to get the best out of your line mates is one of the most important things in the National Hockey League. And, you know, when he was playing with Iginla, he played a different style than when he was playing with Sakic, because they're different players and they need different things. And so I think Nemestikov is really underrated in what he brings to that line and how he is sort of the cohesive part of it that sort of ties it all together. Because if he's not doing what he's doing, then Stamkos and Kucherov can't do what they're doing. So if I could say someone to kind of watch, like when you watch that line, it's hard to take your eyes off of Stamkos and Kucherov, but if you watch Nemestikov and what he does, he's a very good player.
And of course, it all goes towards hockey chemistry, which when a team is able to channel, can produce some extraordinary things on the ice surface. Does that mean, in your opinion, that the Tampa Bay Lightning are the gold standard in the East as you see them right now, given how they've played and how they're gelling as a team?
I mean, so far, the way it's gone for that team, it looks like in the East it's Tampa Bay and then everybody else, maybe Tampa and the Leafs and then everybody else, but even the Leafs, they're not on Stamkos's. They're not on Tampa's level, I don't see, quite yet, but I think Tampa's got a lot more experience in their lineup as well, but they just can't seem to do anything wrong, that team right now, so I definitely think they are the team to beat in the East.
I think we need to start a segment called Jackie Redmond's Crystal Ball, because once again, I'm going to ask you something that involves you having to really project and theorize. So let's look at the Maple Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens, say, into the future around Christmas. We're heading to the end of the year. What do you foresee potentially happening to each team in terms of the way they're trending? What do you expect will happen either to any players involved or executives that fans maybe should anticipate for each franchise?
Let's start with the Habs, because their situation is, well, there's a little more pressure on that team than on the Leafs. I was reading the other day after the Saturday night game that Montreal obviously lost. People were freaking out. People were calling for Bergevin to get fired, for all these different things. But when you look at the standings, the Habs are only 5 points out of a playoff spot, which, if they're still 5 points out at the end of December, might be a bit of an issue, But, you know, they're only 5 points out, and that's without Carey Price in the lineup. So when they get him back, I think it changes their team tremendously. But I think they're in trouble. I don't think that they're a playoff team, especially if Carey Price doesn't get back soon, and that if he doesn't get back to playing like Carey Price when he does come back, because he is Montreal goes as Carey Price goes, I think. So they need him back desperately. Charlie Lindgren was good for a little while, but he's not going to be, can't win for them the entire season. So we'll see what happens there. And their goal differential is horrendous. Have you looked at it? I'm looking at
it's
it
not
right
pretty.
Now, actually.
It's not pretty.
It's minus 23.
That's a problem this early in the year, isn't it?
Yeah. They need to start scoring some goals. My goodness.
By the way, the more that we chuckle and kind of remunerate on these statistics and figures, it's only more reason for the Habs fan to get angry at me later.
I'm sorry to Habs fans that are listening. I'm really sorry, but just know that 4 years ago, my team was in shambles. So I feel the pain. But, you know, not all is lost with Montreal. We'll see how it plays out. But I do think Toronto, just when it's all said and done, and, you know, a month from now at Christmas time, I think Toronto will be in a better spot than Montreal, and I think that Toronto is no doubt a playoff team. But I will say, you know, we saw them lose to the Coyotes last night, and sometimes when they lose, you can see that inexperience in the team. When they play teams that aren't on their level, they sort of play to the level of the competition. So we'll see how they iron that out over the course of the next few weeks. What worries me about the Leafs is playoff time. Because they're so young, they've got one round of playoff experience for a lot of their core players. And I just think about a 7-game series when it's a tighter game, it's a tighter checked game, when everything changes, I wonder how the Leafs do in that situation. And, of course, it all depends who they're matched up against in the first round. But, yeah, we gotta see. I still need to see more of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think, before I can decide if they are the second or third best team in the East.
Do you anticipate that either front office might do something unpredictable, something major in the form of a trade or an executive decision before this year is over?
With the Leafs?
Either the Montreal Canadiens or the Toronto Maple Leafs. Can you see something happening that really stirs and shakes up the fan base, even with one team trending in the wrong direction and the other trying to get over the hump? Because let's face it, losing to the Arizona Coyotes is not exactly a recipe for success.
No, it is not good. I was so mad when I turned that game on last night. But
Why do you think that happened, Jackie? I mean, you've seen so many hockey games now. How do fans appreciate or digest something like that after such an inspirational win on Saturday night and then laying that egg last night?
I don't know what the answer is. You know, I don't think that the Leafs played poorly last night. I just think this is the great thing about the NHL, is that there is a lot of parity. And I'm not saying the Coyotes are good, because they're not. But they aren't as bad of a team as the first 15 games made everybody think that they were, especially when they have Antti Raanta in net, because he is a lot better than when they had Louis Domingue back there and he couldn't stop beach ball. So, you know, the Coyotes are going to win some games because they have him back. He's playing all right. So that's going to happen. With that said, I still think it's inexcusable for the Leafs to lose to them. But to answer your original question, I think we're more likely to see a big move made by the Montreal Canadiens than the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the only reason I say that is because I think there's a lot more pressure on the Montreal Canadiens than there is on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Because the Toronto Maple Leafs, if we're really looking at this big picture, are still way ahead of schedule than what anyone
That's
thought
true.
They would be a season and a half ago. So the pressure isn't as high on the Toronto Maple Leafs as it is on the Habs, who a couple of years ago were a playoff team. They had some of the best players in the league on their team. They made a bunch of moves, and suddenly they can't win hockey games. So I understand why there's pressure in Montreal, that's for sure.
Amazing, isn't it, Jackie, that you can make all these different moves. Some work, some backfire. If too many backfire, then you find yourself in the situation that Mark Bergevin is. Sometimes you can also simply be given gift after gift every year of first overall picks and still find a way to have a losing record. What's going on at Edmonton? Why are the Oilers such insufferable considering that they have Connor McDavid, the vaunted best player in hockey?
the million-dollar question. Like, what is going on? Edmonton's not going to make the playoffs this year, and it's mind-blowing.
That's amazing.
The most shocking thing about it to me is that the team is having trouble scoring goals. Like, what? That makes, you know, I could understand if maybe they were scoring a lot of goals, but they were losing because defensively they're just not where they need to be yet. But the fact that they're not scoring a lot is what really just doesn't make any sense to me. And I'd be curious to talk to Todd McClellan and see, you know, what he would have to say about that, because it's something that just doesn't really make sense to me, you know? So,
yeah.
What do you think it is?
How does a team get a treasure trove of first overall picks, not just first round picks, but I mean, how many gifts need to be handed by the league for all of their repeated tanking? I guess I get very frustrated when I ask myself, is it really fundamentally a question of coaching and leadership on the ice? Because it's not about talent. They always get the talent, but it seems like the way that they've presided over the development of these players, in particular Yakupov, or losing Taylor Hall. I mean, I'm still wrapping my head around trading a defensive defenseman for one of the arguably top 10 most talented players in the league, and Taylor Hall, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. And, you know, like, you watch Taylor Hall now in New Jersey, you know, that team is doing very well with, you know, what's funny about the Devils is that they have a lot of young talent as well. You know, they get Nico Hischier last year, and that team is finding ways to win, and they look like a better, more complete team than the Edmonton Oilers. I don't know what it is out there. And the crazy thing about it is that when they had their playoff run last year, everyone thought, oh man, it's finally starting to come together for the Oilers. And I think because of that playoff run, the start to this season has been such a letdown for the Oilers. And it's left people scratching their heads, because I will say, I do think Todd McClellan is a great coach. So I don't know what is going on there, but they got to figure it out, because it's just not, it can't keep going like this.
Absolutely, and it exposes the lack of depth as well, because once the Draisaitl injury became apparent and the concerns over the general health of the team, all the pressure went on to one player, which is something I think you'll agree the Leafs are very privileged to have. They can lose an Austin Matthews and go 4-0 without him.
Yeah, it was very impressive what they did without Austin Matthews. And you look at someone like Connor McDavid, one of the most exciting players to watch, one of the best in the league, will probably be the best player in the league in a few years. You want him on a competitive team. You know, I don't want to see Connor McDavid playing for a team that's not good. It just seems like such a ripoff to hockey fans, you know? Like, I want to see Connor McDavid in the playoffs. So the fact that that probably won't happen this year sucks. And I'm not an Oilers fan. I'm just a hockey fan. And that sucks. It sucks that his team is not that relevant.
The league can't be thrilled with that. The same way I'm sure they weren't thrilled when Mario Lemieux in his first 4 or 5 years in Pittsburgh was scoring almost 200 points with barely anyone in the seats to watch him.
Yeah, exactly. So something's got to give in Edmonton, but we've been saying that for what feels like ever. I feel like I've been saying that for a decade.
From a truly Canadian perspective is what you and I are imagining. What about the American side of things? What have you noticed on the U.S. side? First of all, who do you think the best American NHL team is today?
It's got to be Tampa, or, you know, St. Louis looks pretty good, but I've fallen into the St. Louis Blues are good trap before, so I try not to fall into it again.
That is a trap. That is a bona fide trap door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like they always suck me in, and then they can't win in the playoffs. But you know what? I have noticed working here and, you know, to be honest, watching a lot more of the American teams, what I've noticed is that, you know, people love to joke that, like, hockey's not a big sport in the United States, and it's just actually not true. There are certain pockets that aren't as popular, but I'm in New York, and where I'm at, I've learned that there are tons of hockey fans here. So that's been, I think, the biggest surprise for me, is that people actually know their crap around here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is impressive, especially considering how much time it takes to find the ESPN tab for clicking on NHL, which is usually hidden.
Yeah.
That tells you how they regard their own sport.
You know what else, though? You know what else, too? And this is not a slight on Canada, because I love Canada, and I grew up watching Canadian hockey, and I still watch Hockey Night in Canada here. I still have access to being able to watch it. But what I do notice here is that a lot of the American broadcasts and the regional broadcasts here, they have a lot of fun when they call the game. You know, they're not afraid to kind of make jokes or you know, be a little bit Homerish or even just, you know, have fun and not take themselves too seriously. And I actually really enjoy that when I watch those broadcasts.
I can appreciate you saying that. There's definitely a certain pomp and hoity-toityness when it comes to Hockey Night in Canada. It's almost like everyone gathering to pray at a shrine of hockey and have all of their, you know.
In Canada, and you know, I was raised on it, and it's part of why I love the game, is, you know, we take our hockey very seriously. It's like religion.
Oh boy,
it's like soccer
ever,
in Europe. And I think that that's amazing, and it's part of the reason that I am who I am, I'm sure. But it's very cool to see here, you know, people who still take it seriously but aren't afraid to, like, have a lot of fun and make jokes and just, you know, have fun with it. So I've enjoyed some of that. And
if
I have fun with it, I just
mean,
like, you know, if there's a controversial call, you know, sometimes they'll be like, well, I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is. And I appreciate that.
Jackie, I can't thank you enough for coming to visit with us on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan. It's been such a pleasure having you. You can find Jackie Redmond again at the NHL Network. She's also the host of the MLB Network. And she's on Twitter at Jackie_Redmond. Thank you so much for dropping by Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan.
Thank you for having me.